Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we are doing a special edition. Normally, we'll do an issue that impacts people throughout the world. Today, it impacts those who have been listening to The Voice of Pacifica. Pacifica was started more than 60 years ago. It was started by a small group of individuals, but originally was the brainchild of one person, Lewis Hill, a pacifist. I have listened to the early archives. He was a believer in bringing all ideas to the table, have the most intelligent and articulate persons share those ideas, and then see if the audience agrees or disagrees and take it from there. However, over the years, Pacifica has morphed. It has changed. And today, it is almost unrecognizable from its original meaning and purpose and quality of broadcast. Pacifica is in crisis. But there is a paradox. It is terminally ill at the local levels, with each of the five stations representing Pacifica, including WBAI in New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFA in Berkeley, KPFT in Houston, and PFW in Washington, D.C. These stations are losing their audience at record numbers. In fact, I have never seen in my many years of broadcasting, more than 40 years of broadcasting, I have never seen a loss of this many people and still have a functioning station. In part, that is because the stations individually are only doing business as. All of the responsibilities ultimately and all of the obligations, legal and financial and managerial, rests with Pacifica's national board and its executive director and the people that they consult with to give them their ideas and suggestions. The stations run fairly anonymously. They are connected, however. They pay dues, and there are some programs that are created at Pacifica's national office in Berkeley and then shared with the other stations. Ideally, however, it was for the stations to create local programming that served the needs of its underserved communities, in effect to be the voice for the voiceless. And in that context, many stations did an admirable job. And once again, it worked for a long period of time, but then it began to be challenged. I remember it was in the mid-1990s that I began to see the problems emanating mainly from WBAI. The constant flights and conflicts. The program director for a period of years was a friend of mine, Samori Marksman. Samori was concerned. He said, Pacifica and BAI are eating itself alive. They're cannibalizing itself. They're not even aware of it. And I said, what can you do? And he said, there's nothing I can do because some of the people involved, including at WBAI, don't like him and don't want him to have the ability to let go of certain programs. And he said to me, he said, you know, there's shows on the air here that should simply not be on the air. The one show in particular that was infamous for being grossly anti-Semitic. It's one thing to take on Zionism and invite the people who are pro-Zionistic on and debate the issues with the most formidable peace persons from both sides. This was not. This was anti-Semitic. I even challenged the producer on why they would not bring in people to debate them, but they would not. In fact, open and honest debate is a rarity at BAI and other Pacifica stations. How do I know that? Because when attacked by a small group of individuals on KPFK and KPFA, people who were a faction supported by a little group called ACT UP, and ACT UP has done some very good work, and I work with them in trying to educate the people of the world about AIDS, its different causes, and different natural non-toxic treatments. In fact, many meetings we held together, and then it split. It had its own internal factions fighting. One group wanted to go more holistic and was not looking at a single cause of AIDS, such as the HIV virus, but rather looking at multiple causes, including the virus, and the other group was looking at just the HIV and were very smart politically, very astute financially, and many of those individuals were able to align themselves with financial interests out of the pharmaceutical industry. In fact, as one of the leading gay activists on AIDS, a professor here in New York City, New York University, told me, in fact, I filmed him in his quotes, he said, AIDS was a big business, and everybody was getting up there to get their hand out. And he talked about, go to any AIDS conference, which I have, and you'll see the gay activists there promoting the pharmaceutical approach as the only approach. And those who did not advocate just a drug approach or advocated natural approaches were excluded and then attacked, whether they were journalists like Charles Ortley, one of the most respected gay journalists in American history. In fact, at one time, he had the number one gay publication, the New York Native, and had an outstanding editorial staff, including Nita Ostrom. They did award-winning reporting, but their funding dried up, their advertising dried up, because they were also attacked and by gay activists aligned with the pharmaceutical company and their own unique ideology. They would now not allow any democracy at all, no freedom of thought, no freedom of exchange or expression in their discussions. They became aligned with KPFA in Berkeley. Therefore, they could attack those of us, myself included, as gay or AIDS denialists. In point of fact, nothing could be further from the truth, and I invited them on my program to debate because I had worked personally with more persons with AIDS than anyone else I knew in the United States using holistic therapies and not charging them at the Tri-State Healing Center, over 1,400 people. And the people I work with actually lived, theirs died, mine lived in mass, theirs died in mass. And yet no one seemed to care because they followed the ideology, they followed the money, they followed the political views and the interpersonal relationships. They didn't follow the truth when it came to helping people. And a major sponsor of that was KPFA. And as a result, when they were throwing their barbs and arrows, simple question, come on the air and debate. Roy of Hollywood said, come on and debate. They wouldn't do it. They're cowards. But cowards work in the shadows. And so much of what's wrong with Pacifica is because of how many different groups work in the shadows, wanting to maintain their shows or their positions in management or their position on local station boards or national boards. And what is left out of all this is, how do you run a legitimate radio station, a non-commercial radio station? How do you find the talent that is necessary to interest the audience? How do you raise funds that can be sustainable? How do you honor that audience? And what do you do if you have bad management or poor people on advisory boards or unqualified people in positions who are politically aligned, ideologically aligned, but have no reason to be in a job because they have no background and experience that would qualify them? And how do you get rid of someone who is not good? How do you get rid of someone on the air who's an anti-Semite? I'll tell you, you don't. Unless they want to leave, it's very difficult to get rid of anyone. And that's because the people who designed this whole power grab put in place procedures and bylaws and rules that made it almost impossible for anything to change at Pacifica. Constant gridlock. As one person said in a recent article, Pacifica was democratized to death. Well, pure democracy is not a bad thing. It is a good thing compared to what else would take its place. However, because I have friends who are inside non-commercial radio and television stations across America, many, they do extremely well. The idea that everyone fights all the time, there's always gridlock on all these non-commercial stations, is not true. In the fact, in the very market, such as KPFK or WBAI, when NYC was just a thought and just beginning to get on its feet, though it had the full backing and financial support of New York City, and another station in Los Angeles was just getting started, they had tiny listenership. Pacifica dominated. We lost that domination. We lost outstanding broadcasters. We lost some extraordinarily talented managers. I know of two managers in particular, one in Washington, D.C. I'll only mention one as just an example. And this man, led PFW in Washington to its highest ratings, its happiest audience, the least complaints, the greatest number of premiums being fulfilled. They could be fulfilled within a week down at PFW, and that, and also they had the most money. They had a full bank account. They had no fund drive, lasted more than 2 weeks, and I remember a fund drive that lasted 1 week because they exceeded their goals. I can also remember, and that man's name was Lou Hankins. Lou Hankins, in my mind, epitomized what a good manager should be, a person that cared first about the station and its audience, the quality of its programming, and he then had the courage, if someone was not doing their job, to see that they were allowed an opportunity to change. If they didn't, they were gone. That's almost impossible today. And as a result, Pacifica is in terminal condition at the local level, but it is optimally healthy at the financial level. Why? Because at the national level, they have assets called their licenses. And it is the quality of those licenses, anywhere from $50 million to $100 million for the one in New York and the one in Los Angeles, smaller amounts for the other ones because they're not commercial licenses. The two are. Plus, they have assets somewhere in the neighborhood of about $3.5 million in buildings they own. Yet they can't get a mortgage because they have debt. And also because one person is owed $2.1 million, Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, and she will not forgive the debt, even though it is foreboding. It is virtually impossible to have an open and honest dialogue on how the most valuable asset in Pacifica's history, Democracy Now!, became privatized. And if those who are against the privatization on a neoliberal basis, ideologically and politically, why can't they look at it at Pacifica? And there is part of the rub. It's not a question of do you do good programming or not. There's some outstanding programs that are done and some not outstanding programs that are done on individual stations. There's a lot of people on Pacifica that support the invasion of countries like Syria and also in North Africa. And yet these very people have never apologized for being wrong. Just like Bush and Cheney were wrong on weapons of mass destruction, they were wrong in wanting to get rid of Gaddafi. Look what took its place. Look at what has happened in Syria. Look at the refugees. That's directly due to people believing in an ideology, whether on the left or the right, of this issue is irrelevant. They were wrong. Yet I never hear anyone apologize, nor is anyone challenged. You're just not allowed to do it. How people get their contracts, you're not allowed to talk about it. Now think of this for a moment. Think of the historically just a handful of the major scandals that have occurred where we've made that fodder for conversation for a long period of time. Go clear back to 1919, you had the Black Sox scandal. You had the Chicago White Sox had widely been regarded as the greatest team in the history of baseball. But the team was divided by two fractious groups acting as gangs of players, with nothing to say to each other. Back then, players were paid a fraction of what they were worth. One faction, controlled by its manager, Charles Kaminsky, ended by throwing the World Series match and lost in order to profit from it. It was a big scandal. Look at the economic scandals. In 1920, the famous Charles Ponzi scandal, from which its name we get the name Ponzi Scheme. Ponzi duped thousands of investors by promising huge returns on international reply coupons, which could be purchased in one country and redeemed for postage stamps in another. Profit was made by the difference in prices between the countries. Ponzi repaid investors with new investor money while pocketing a lot for himself. It is said he took in $20 million in a few months. That's equal to $222 million today. Six banks crumbled due to the scheme. In 2009, you had a man named Nami, a Japanese businessman who was the chairman of a Japanese bedding and linen company. He created a fictional currency called Enten, E-N-T-E-N, meaning divine yen, and took in $1.4 billion from 37,000 investors by convincing them the world's economies would collapse and his Enten currency would then make them wealthy. Of course, we had Bernie Madoff, Bernie Madoff, And then we also had the LIBOR scandal. Now, this is recent. In fact, this is still in the courts. Some have settled. Others would be charged. But we had as many as 16 different banks, the too big to fail banks, manipulating interest rates that affected upwards of $500 trillion over a period of time. It's about $5 trillion daily. And in fact, Professor Lowe at MIT said it dwarfed by orders of magnitude any financial scam in the history of markets. You have Big Pharma and all of its schemes and scams and frauds and scandals and corruption over the years. You had the Merck mumps vaccine fraud. You had the GlaxoSmithKline getting the largest fine in Big Pharma's history, $3 billion for promoting Paxil, Wellbutrin, and Avendia for unproven uses and failing to report any adverse safety data regarding the diabetes drug Avendia. You had the Takeda Pharmaceutical Company failed to report that its diabetes drug Actos was known to cause congestive heart failure and bladder cancer. And last year, Glaxo was caught by the Chinese government for bribing medical doctors and government officials to promote their drugs. Glaxo was charged $488 million. And then you have labor union scandals. You have the head of the Field Supervisor Association representing Port Authority workers pleading guilty in Brooklyn federal court to looting $300,000 in member dues over 5 years. And then, of course, you have all the religious scandals. In fact, the founder of Mormonism pulled one of the biggest religious frauds with a Book of Mormon believed to be the handwritten account of the prophet Abraham, known in Mormonism as the Book of Abraham. And Smith in 1835 declared he had translated an Egyptian scroll purported to be the work of Abraham, and this is part of the Mormon church. But the scroll mysteriously vanished. Later in 1966, the scroll turned up in the New York Metropolitan Museum of Art, and it turned out to be just a standard Egyptian text that was often buried with the common Egyptian dead. The scandal encouraged many Mormons to leave the church. Vatileaks dealt with the Vatican documents given to the Italian press, exposing corruption, blackmail of gay clergy, and other conspiratorial actions within the Catholic Church, such as bribes to receive an audience with the Pope, and the Pope's personal finances, which were always kept secret. And much of the scandal surrounded Pope Benedict, who later was forced to resign on the excuse of poor health. It wasn't. And Jimmy Swaggart and Ted Haggard and Lonnie Frisbee, lots of scandals. Now, one of the things these all have in common is ultimately they became public. But while they were happening, lots of people knew about them and decided it was best for the institutions to cover them up. There's a new movie opening starring Michael Keaton about the actual story of how a Boston paper and a group of reporters decided to take on the entire Catholic Church and the very powerful Catholic hierarchy in the Boston area and hence nationwide, and the long fight that it took to do that and all the pushback and threats they got. But they finally got the story out, hence the pedophile scam within the Catholic Church. Now, why am I suggesting all this is to be important in our discussion? Because here's the deal. Everyone at Pacifica knows about the scandals of the Catholic Church and or the scandal of the Catholic laundries in Ireland, where young girls were sent and could spend their whole life without ever getting outside, never being paid a penny, working 6 days a week, and all that money going to the church. And they would put that on their programs, and have, and rightly so. But why is it that Pacifica does not allow, nor does anyone dare, to talk about its own scandals? I have spoken with three executive directors of Pacifica, who I will not name, and I asked them, is it true that one of the largest expenses in Pacifica has been for years, up to when I spoke to them, the defense of sexual harassment suits and or paying settlements? And they said yes. In fact, one executive director told me it was the second largest charge at Pacifica. I then said, what would happen if you told the audience when you were raising funds, we need this money because we have people within the hierarchy at stations around Pacifica who are being charged with sexual offenses and we have to defend them and we have to settle with their victims? How much money do you think it would come in? how many people would stop listening. We're supposed to be the defender of women's rights. We're supposed to be defender of human rights. We're supposed to be the first voice, the voice of the voiceless. Well, the voiceless are the victims. And yet, let me tell you a story, a true story, and recent. I received a call from a person who asked could they speak with me about an important problem, and I said yes. They came to my office, and they said, I feel very uncomfortable talking about this, but I just have to talk with someone, and I trust you, and I want to share this with you. And I said, what is it? I was sexually assaulted by someone in Pacifica. They told me the person, and I said, did you go to the police? Did you report this? The person said, no, because the person showed me a gun and told me about being connected with members of organized crime and that I could have members of my family killed. And unfortunately, this person not only sexually abused me, but beat me. I went home. My face was bruised. My daughter was in shock. And I said, did you go to a rape center? Because a person claimed they were raped repeatedly. During this hour and a half conversation, the person told me that they believed over 150 other victims existed. I said, how do you know? I saw photographs. What kind of photographs? The person would take photographs of these people in different compromised positions. Why didn't they go to the police? Why hasn't anybody dropped a dime on this? If it's true, mind you, let me make this clear, these are allegations. That does not mean they are accurate. So I called in two people important who I will not mention from Pacifica, and I had them repeat the story that this woman was telling to them. There were questions asked. And the person said that they had a hard drive with information on it. They did go to a rape center to get information. But it had caused them enormous distress. Now, I cannot say more than that because I won't identify the person. So I simply said to the people at Pacifica, in positions of authority and fiduciary responsibility, why don't you simply invite the person in without making accusation and question them? In a fair and prudent manner, you bring someone in and you say, here are some allegations against you, and let them say, well, it's not true, you know, the person's crazy, a psycho, or it's true. But at least confront it. Otherwise, you have a person with an allegation of being a repeat sexual offender, and this should not be allowed. Time went by, and the person was not looking for money. They just wanted this person to be held accountable. And nothing happened. Nothing. Nothing was done. Not a thing. That's Pacifica. It continues. Now, whether the person was guilty of these crimes against people in the audience or not, we won't know. But there was a credible allegation made. Let's jump ahead. So now we're willing to tell the Catholic Church you should not have any repeat offenders, any offenders, and you hid them around the world. The Pope, the last Pope Benedict, was responsible for hiding these. They were all fully aware at the top of the Catholic Church that these pedophiles existed for a long time, and they wanted to hide it, cover it up, because of what it might do to the reputation of the Church. Well, in point of fact, why can't we deal with these issues at Pacifica? But it's more than that. I have credible information that there has been long-term copying of CDs and DVDs by individuals within Pacifica, and we actually have proof of some of these. And yet, when asked, and I personally asked a person who's a fiduciary at Pacifica, why don't you confront this? Well, there was a meeting. There was a meeting of all the management, and it was discussed. And word from that meeting by two of the four people at the meeting was, yeah, it was discussed, yes, it was acknowledged, but it's not being done anymore because the machines that were doing it were sent back to the national office, except they weren't. And I won't go further than that because I have an enormous amount of material I'm saving for the Attorney General or the state's attorney when subpoenaed, and this will make it into the court system. Pacifica, its management, does not have the right legally to hide from its audience or the law any suspicion of crimes. And because it's inconvenient what it will cost it in its reputation or financially. So this will be brought forward in all the emails discussing this, and the particulars and the documentation will be presented, as will the person who is willing to be testifying about the serial sexual violations. And then it is for the authorities to determine, is it real or not? Is it credible or not? And so right off the bat, you have two major issues that go beyond incompetence, mismanagement, bad programming, that are very serious. Now, these could threaten the license of the station, but something else could threaten the license of the station, and that is the lack of timeliness, incompleteness in fulfilling premiums. There are times when people make mistakes, completely understandable and acceptable. You correct the mistake, you say, we're sorry, and you say, we missed it, and you get out of premium. That's understood in all businesses. It's a different matter when you raise money, knowing full well you have nothing to do to pay for the premiums. That's different. That actually happened on PFW when I was spoken with the program director and said, Gary, what do you want to pitch this? And I told him some things I thought, some books and new films. Great idea. And then when I waited and it didn't happen, and then I called back about 2 weeks later and says, we're right near the pitching time, and I gave some suggestions. When's the marathon start? She said, it's over. I said, what do you mean it's over? Well, the marathon's over. How's it over? I didn't pitch. I can't talk about it. What do you mean? Is there a reason you excluded me? You can exclude me for any reason you want. That's your business, but just be honest with me. I better put you over to someone. So they put me over to someone in management, and I said, what happened? Well, I'm a little embarrassed to tell you, but the fund drive's over. We used your premiums. Okay, so you used my premiums. Why did you choose not to have me on the air? Because you said you will not do any more drives unless the previous premiums were paid for and delivered to the listeners. We had no money, hence we could not deliver any premiums, so we went ahead and pitched your premiums without you. I said, but that's not right. You know, how can you possibly do that? And they didn't even have money for that premium. So that was malice aforethought. That is a serious offense. This is just one of the letters that I have. This is to WPFW. I will not mention the person's name. Quote, and this is recent, but then there's all the corresponding letters that go back with this one. And this one is dated 2015, August 28th. Quote, there has been several months since we last communicated regarding the outstanding pledge gifts I ordered and never received from past fund drives. Your recommendation was to communicate with and I did. However, you and this person were able to alert me about some of the gifts being sent and received, but there are 13 items remaining unaccountable. And, of course, some of those items were from Gary Nall. Now, I have not been on PFW since I quit 2 years ago. So how they got these items or how they were still pitching them when I'm not there, I am not aware of. What I do know is that there were a lot of other items from other people. And this person has all the correspondence showing all the times they wrote and nothing was done. They still didn't get their premiums. That is epidemic at Pacifica, as is this. This went directly to my webmaster, Philip. Hello, Philip. As you can tell by this email, no one is responding to my issue. I left 3 to 4 messages with, and I won't mention the person name at WBAI, no response. I ran into someone at a rally event in New York City over last Thursday who has a friend who works at WBAI, told me that this is not unusual for ordering and not receiving Gary's premiums. He also said other hosts personally make sure they give their premiums out to listeners. I also tried to contact such and such, did not work. Another frustrated person, at a recent retreat, I asked the people in attendance, I said, how many of you have ordered premiums, not received them? Almost every hand went up. I said, how long's it been? Let's go back a year. Half the hands were still up. So not giving premiums in a timely manner, not responding to the people, not giving them an FTC letter explaining that you could give them a refund or when the premium be coming is simply not acceptable. It runs in violation, could literally cost Pacifica BAI's license. And therefore, you wouldn't have a $100 million station value in the license that some members of Pacifica National Board would like to see go under so they could sell BAI's license and pocket that money into their own accounts out there, their corporate nonprofit accounts, and run Pacifica their own way forever. As a result, throughout the foundation, there is a problem getting premiums because they are running out of audience, they're running out of money. They do not have the people in place to do the fundraising, and as a result, they are lurching from fund drive to fund drive, and now emergency fund drives frequently run 30 days. I left KPFK 2 years ago. I left voluntarily when the personal attacks would not stop, the people doing it were not being reprimanded, and yet the person was such a coward they would not come on the air and debate me. I left PFW for similar reasons. I don't want to be a part. I could no longer raise money or support an audience in good faith, knowing that the people who are responsible for these indiscretions, malfeasance, and poor management were going to get their paychecks, but my audience would not get its premiums. At a certain point, you have to make a sacrifice, and that was the sacrifice I chose to make. Now here we are today. The stations are failing for a lot of reasons. And there is no one reason. And one of the problems is, how can we save it, or can we at all? Will it learn any lesson, or will just it continue to lurch from one disaster, one crisis to another? And is there any courage by anyone in Pacifica to address these issues in a way that they will get handled? There are people who have the courage to bring them to the National Board's attention. Everything I've just told you, everything I can support, has been sent to the National Board, so all the members of the National Board are aware of this. The executive directors are aware of this. Station managers are aware of this. But nothing gets done. They can all give you excuses. And all the while, other nonprofit radio stations are not only honoring their audience, doing good programming, and even younger programming, but actually being managed professionally. To join us in this discussion, we are starting with a longtime Pacifica and WBAI broadcaster and member of the National Board. So she has the ability to understand what goes on at the national level as well as the local level. And she's been there long enough to have a perspective. Janet Coleman, nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary.
Janet?
Well, I think that several things you talked about struck me deeply. One is the analogy to a church. And to a certain degree, Pacific is a church for a lot of us. We believe in it. We have a lot of faith in it. We have in the institution that Lou Hill envisioned. And I think, and I think on the level of parish priests, where we talk to our audiences, I think that there may be still some reality there in that church. A lot of it. Nobody wants to lose it. Nobody wants to lose Pacifica, who belongs to it. That seems to be an overriding concern. So we don't want to tarnish our temple to a certain degree, to a huge degree. However, My first concern, I happen to find myself on the PNB as a placeholder, really. What I've learned there, I'm not happy about. I've learned the actual reasons why the wheels are so jammed at Pacifica. There are too damn many people on the board, none of whom have any broadcasting connection, except perhaps four or five of them who were belong to radio staff. This is a business. It's a radio business. It's a broadcasting entity. It's not a cesspool for a bunch of activists, and yet that is what it has become. It's a problem. People are elected, and elected without any credentials, without any passing any tests. They're elected to belong to the local station boards. All they have to do is be a member, and they're a listener, and they are eligible to be part of this governance system. They rise through the ranks of this governance system. They go from local station board to, say, chair of the local station board, to member of the Pacifica National Board, to head of a committee, to chair of the national station board, to almost invariably to becoming dually executive director, because involved here are two factions that have fought each other and continue to fight each other to the death. They may be factions that vary in majority by a single vote or one or two votes, but they are pitted viciously against each other. And they keep secrets from each other, so nobody really knows what's going on when one faction is in power and one isn't. But you can be sure that neither faction will provide the Pacifica Network with a working professional, somebody who knows anything about how to achieve what Samori Marksman was able to achieve at WBAI, which was millions of dollars in fundraising in a couple of weeks. Because he was an intellectual, he was brilliant, he thought about what the audience might want, he thought about the ways that he had envisioned WBAI and what a great radio station might be. Have I just cut myself off?
No, you're there.
Oh, okay. He put time, effort, energy into the business of the radio station, not who should be the legal, who should be the friend or the crony, who should we stick in there as general manager, not who should we stick in there as counsel, not who we should chair the finance committee, not none of this. The fact that radio almost doesn't count here at all is the reason that Pacifica is failing. I really, the buck stops there. Or the things that you've mentioned about the lawsuits for Bear Stearns wouldn't allow the kind of sexual harassment that went on at Pacifica. Can't say I know of it happening now. Possibly people are scared out of it. But really, cases of sexual harassment. Really. Can you imagine a normal corporation putting up with that or hiding it or keeping it under the... No. Why would Pacifica do that? Because nobody there is a professional. That's about the answer.
Nor am I.
I don't belong on any Pacifica National Board. I don't know how to be a lawyer. I don't know how to do finances. I know how to be a broadcaster. And nobody cares about that.
Janet, I would like for you to address two issues, please.
Yes.
One is that there are currently people working within Pacifica who have been challenged and lost at the National Labor Relations Board and in lawsuits for sexual harassment. They're still there. And I believe people should know that, because in other corporations, if you're found to have sexually harassed someone, you don't work there anymore. But now we're talking about something different. We're talking about allegations of sexual assault, rape. Now, right now, Bill Cosby is being challenged for what seems to be about 40 years of serial sexual assault against many different women. That's the allegations. And it's cost him. And if he's guilty, rightly so. And all those victims took a long time to come forward because there was fear. Now we have someone coming forward and saying there are over 140 women who they believe were sexually assaulted, not harassed, assaulted, and the Pacifica is not doing anything about it. What should be done? You're on the national board. You saw the letter. What should we do so that we don't
letter,
just walk
actually.
Away from this as if we don't want this to be a black eye for Pacifica? It is a black eye. If we say we care about women's rights and the sanctity of womanhood, and then we allow this to go unaddressed? I'd like your thoughts, please.
Well, I don't believe that I have seen that letter officially. I've heard this anecdotally, and it hasn't really come to the table among the Pacifica National Board. So my answer as to what to do about it is, you mean, well, it's a complicated charge, isn't it? We can't talk about it, can we? Because it's a legal issue. I don't know how we can talk about the specifics of it. But have you brought it to the attention in the form of a motion? What do you want done of it with this?
I would like to have Pacifica. By the way, John Prophet was told about this. He had an opportunity when he came to New York last to meet with the person who alleges that they were the victim.
Okay, I didn't have that opportunity. I was in California when this went down.
And he chose not to communicate with us and not to respond and not to show up where he could have at least questioned this person and decided for himself whether there was veracity to the claims or not. And I believe that Pacifica has a legal responsibility to investigate this. As far as they can possibly do, and then based upon what they find, turn it over. If they find any credibility to these charges, turn it over to the legal authorities for further criminal prosecution.
Well, you could formally send me that letter, and I would formally raise it to the board. It hasn't been sent to me in any such format, you know?
Okay. Now, Janet, I'd like you to hold your thoughts for a moment, because I'd like to bring on to the air at this moment, Steve Brown, who is a member of the National Board. He is a member of the local station board. He has been a longtime BAI supporter. And Steve has been not only critical of some of the issues at Pacifica, but he's also brought forward some of the best ideas for saving WBAI and saving Pacifica. In fact, before we say, Steve, nice to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Gary. It's nice to be here.
Steve, I'd like for you to please tell the audience what you see the issues at Pacifica and WBAI are, and then the solutions that you see could help the station and, as Janet said incorrectly, so those of us who are part of the station and the foundation want to see it survive, but we want to see change that is legitimate, that honors the audience, the true mission, with a sense of integrity, and not all this internecine conflict and self-interest that seems to go on every day at the different levels. The forum is yours. Take your time.
Hi. Well, obviously the biggest immediate problem now is that Pacifica has no money.
It
does not have enough revenue to cover its operating costs. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
Please continue.
Yeah. So, there have been many suggestions as to how to get money, and I don't think any of them are realistic. As well, look for grants. Well, there are no grants available. We've lost the CPB money because we haven't been able to file timely audits, and there's been recently a suggestion that we mortgage some of Pacifica's assets. There are buildings in Los Angeles with KPFK using it, and one in Berkeley that KPFA uses, and another one in Houston that KPFT uses. And that's possible, except that I don't think any bank would give a mortgage to Pacifica, given its credit rating, which is terrible. Its income is not sufficient for its operations, and it's already almost $4 million in debt to a variety of creditors. So, and even if it got a mortgage, that adds an additional, let's say, $250,000 a year in debt service, which I don't think Pacifica could handle, and it would lose those buildings. My suggestion, which I've been making for years, is that Pacifica turn its efforts to collecting about a third of the money from each fund drive that it doesn't collect, pledges that are never received. And there's an easy way to collect them, and I'm not going to go into it now. I have a lot of experience in this field since I ran marketing firms and fulfillment houses for a long time. That would give Pacifica like as much as $3 million extra a year to use for breathing space. Now, that breathing space would enable it to revitalize its programming grid. In other words, make sure it had programs that people wanted to hear, because they're not tuning in, so they don't want to hear them, because our membership has declined from almost 100,000 just a few years ago to now 65,000. And we need, in my estimation, about 150,000 members in order to be self-sufficient and comfortable. In order to do that, we have to change the way we operate. And that's a whole other story with everybody participating in a friendly way, which I think is impossible. There are very few friends in Pacifica. They're only combatants. And I don't know how to solve that. I've been around Pacifica for a long time, and I confess absolute failure. And in part, I may have even contributed to the combativeness. I don't know, but it's here. The next part is, if Pacifica did get the money and did revitalize its programming grid, that still wouldn't get it a single new listener, because nobody knows Pacifica exists. And so the third part of that solution is publicity, massive continuing publicity, not on Pacifica stations where somebody puts on a cart and says, we're great, why don't you listen to this program? I mean on other radio stations, in magazines and newspapers, on bus cards, on the internet, skywriting, any means, social media, of course, any means necessary to inform the huge public that Pacifica can reach with its stations that we exist and we have programs they have to hear. Without that, it doesn't matter how much money Pacifica raises or how great its program grid is. Nobody will know us, and nobody will listen. We will die. I hope that wasn't too much of a rant.
No, you're suggesting that you need a massive publicity campaign. I think everyone would agree with that. There's been virtually no publicity. The trouble is the publicity that comes from Pacifica or its stations is almost universally bad. We know that we have about $4.4 million in assets in buildings, and yet there's too much debt going against that. So we are insolvent at one level, and there's a high probability within the next 12 months or so that WBAI will simply be sold, which none of us want to see, but certain people at the National Board and in Berkeley do want to see. In fact, there's factions out there working aggressively to control Pacifica, to control the National Board, whose agendas are not in alignment with the future of BAI. After all, it's an enormous asset. They can sell it, and then they use that money as they choose, since they dominate the board. And minor voices are not given any credibility. I want to come back for a moment to you, Janet. Janet, you've been there for a long time. If you were to give us several suggestions that what you believe could help save BAI, please share those with us now.
Well, you know, there's always talk, there's constant talk among board members about revising the bylaws, which are exceedingly complicated. The thing is as complicated, the governance system of Pacifica is as complicated as a Politburo. Wheels within wheels, little station boards, large central government, the Pacifica National Board, many, many committees. And these operate as slowly as molasses, as any political system might, you know. I mean, there's a certain amount of checks and balances involved. Broadcasting really requires the brakes, you know, mechanics, to be able to start and stop on a dime. You have to be receptive to what's happening. I really feel that we need people addressing the issues of what is on our air. I really do think we have to seek talented people, not cronies. You're asking me something I'm getting more emotional about than I care to, because I have... I feel I've tried everything I know. But radio is made a minute at a time. It's like knitting. It takes constant work, and it's an hour at a time and a day at a time. And if there aren't people there who are free to do that broadcasting and supported in that broadcasting, nobody's going to come to listen. It's not something you envision on a piece of paper or get a list of celebrities and say, I think that, you know, let's put Johnny G on at 10 o'clock and, oh, Rosie P will, you know, bring in Latino people or whatever it is. That's not really the way it works. It works on a grid of great complication, great care, great skill. And unless we really shift our attention from the personal and political and conceptual politics of the place to focusing on what goes on our air, I don't see a way of surviving at all. I think if we had a dozen programs on the air like you're hosting now, we'd have more listenership than we have at the moment. You know, if this is a listener-supported and listener-involved set of radio stations, then the listeners really ought to be involved in more than just buying things quarterly, and being asked for money. There should be some feedback from them that's authentic and genuine.
To share some ideas that hopefully could be considered that would help BAI, its other stations, and the foundation survive. First and foremost, we have to define who we are. Many of the best progressive minds in the foundation's history were purged years ago, and hence we have a lot of the corporate liberals or people who don't really look for the truth. We need programming to address their issues. We need young programming. We need programming that is far more diverse on many different topics than what we have. We have some outstanding program. You don't get better than James Ursay in what he does with his program. We have outstanding program. A lot of it's syndicated. We need more local programming that is professionally driven on the needs of the local community. We need to know that when money comes in for a premium, a book, a video, whatever it may be, that money is immediately processed so that the person's premium can be purchased and then sent out to them. And we should have someone who just does that and is paid to do that. We should hire professional fundraisers to come in. These people are outstanding at raising money. And we have a lot of programs that if you listen, they don't have a background in pitching. I don't blame them. They're just not professional at fundraising. We need professional fundraisers. We also need to finally go to all those celebrities that you hear, Danny Glover, Michael Moore, Noam Chomsky, Phil Donahue, and the rappers and others, and say, look, come in and help us with an actual fund drive. Michael, could you do a premiere of your newest movie where the funds go to the station? Danny, could you do some fundraising on the air? These people have deep pockets, I'm assuming most do. I know some of them personally, and I know they do. So giving a tax-deductible donation to the station, I don't know if anyone's ever asked them. But on PBS and many other national programs that are non-commercial, they have celebrities. Also, we have to understand, bring in professionals. We desperately need, a customer service, someone who is there nationally to address customer needs at all the stations. We need a human resource person who can hire and fire people based upon the competency of their skills and their ability to do the work. We need a program, national program director. I would get rid of the local program directors completely and have national programming who has background and experience in professional programming of non-commercial issues and knows the socially relevant issues and what we stand for. We're not commercial radio, and that person's word becomes the word. And they're not brought in because they're a good lefty. They're brought in because they're professional at what they do. We need a trustee, a person that is not elected, but rather appointed, that has no affiliation with any of the groups or any of the individuals who can then oversee everything at Pacifica, and if something's not working, intercede on behalf of the foundation and make the changes. We also need a lawyer working full-time for Pacifica on his payroll between $150,000 and $175,000 a year. We spend a lot more than that on legal fees each year by getting outside people. And if you had one on staff, it would save you money. I have one to two lawyers all the time on my staff. It's worth it. And then look for programs that there are no shortage of great programs that would address the various needs. And then, as Steve said, and rightly so, let's start advertising and promoting. We have enough good people doing good enough stories and are good in what they do that we could generate local publicity and even national publicity, and we're not doing it. We also, as Steve said, we need to go back and reconnect with those people who promised to pledge, did pledge, and then stopped and never sent the money. As he said, that's $3.3 million we could be getting each year from there. And also, we need a general accounting system with one person who is ahead of it. So every single transaction, every expense, and every income, no matter where it comes from, goes to one office, and that person has control, and that's the only person that has control. So all bills are paid from one place, all expenses are recorded, and that takes away any of the suspicion that any local person at a station is having a double set of books, which they may or may not have, is doing things for their own self-benefit instead of the station. We don't know that that's true or not. And also of someone who does a fulfillment follow-up. Just like if you buy something in the anything, you get a follow-up letter. We should have someone who follows up and says, did you get your premium? Are you happy with it? And then be in compliance with the FTC's 30-day rule. We also have to be in compliance that there is no duplicating or copying of any of the CD and DVDs, because that's pirating, and that's a big federal offense. That alone, according to statistics from Steve Brown, that alone could virtually take the entire foundation away from Pacifica, give it over to a trustee who would then could give it, or a bank, a judge, and give it, the FTC could give it to, put it up for sale. Hence, all these people have been scheming, would get nothing, but Pacific, as we know it, would simply die because of what we did with malfeasance, lack of oversight, lack of accountability, and lack of honesty ourselves. And we're literally there. There are three major issues that could tip Pacifica into insolvency, and we wouldn't be able to get out of this at all. We need someone who will come in and see that whatever we've got going on that's wrong, they clean house without any consideration. We've got programs on the air that are so old that you can't imagine that anything relevant is coming out. And I chose to listen to some of these, and I'm thinking, what kind of audience do they have? And you look in the tiny little audience as if somehow they have a right to that program. No one has a right to a program. You know, the audience determines this. We should have arbitrons so we know whether or not any program is relevant. I'm looking at the arbitrons, and I want to tell you something. Janet and Steve, if you knew how many shows have very little or almost no audience and yet are considered popular, they're considered popular because the person running it has a good name, but they don't have an audience. They're not bringing any money. They did at one time. They don't now. I'm seeing the numbers. So when you have a program that no longer brings in the numbers, you say goodbye to that program, and you get some program that will. And Pacifica should be earning money for its programs, not paying money for any program. I believe that Pacifica should pay no money for any program. I think that is wrong. I believe that, and also I personally believe that Democracy Now! Should forgive its $2 million debt to Pacifica. I think that would be a noble notion, considering how many tens of millions of dollars they have benefited from and for themselves, and I believe their latest funding form show $21 million in their bank account. That's good for them. That's good for them, but it's not good for Pacifica today. Those are some of the changes I'd like to see. Janet, your final thoughts on this, please.
Well, again, some professional institutional practices like a fulfillment arm, a professional fulfillment arm, professional fundraising, somebody who was a national development director who could make sure that the books are open enough so that foundations and grant money could be actually processed in favor of Pacifica. I don't understand why we don't have a whole bunch of foundation money supporting us. We could. We have to have our finances in order, and we have to have somebody who genuinely understands how to raise money. And I think we're like a lemonade stand, you know. We function as if we're not a multi-million dollar corporation. And doing business for millions and millions of people and possibly really changing the fate of our country. We have a voice, we have a potential to have a huge, huge megaphone. But I do see the governance structure as such an impediment. I really do not know how to make that go away and recreate itself into something that works functionally. I think we'd need a much more discussion on that subject. People who have real ideas about how to simplify and strategize and how to make this a more streamlined organization. Because the problems that occur at one station occur at all of the stations. What goes wrong at BAI goes wrong at all of them. It just happens that one of the stations, KPFA, has really been the beneficiary of most of the staffing and most of the self-generosity of the organization. And BAI has in a way been left to destroy itself by
Right, but we have to stop it. Janet, we're running close to the end of our time. Steve, I'd like you to address what I just suggested as ways of helping save Pacifica and BAI. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I think your suggestions are good. I mean, there's so much to add, and in time that remains to go into detail, I can't see doing it. I do have a question. I thought that Summer Reese and Grace Aaron were going to be on the program.
They
former
are.
Former executive
They're coming
director.
Right up right now. In fact, I just wanted to get this part out of the way. Now let's go over to the West Coast and say hello to the former executive directors, Summer Reese and Grace Aaron. Summer, we'll start with you. Nice to have you on with us.
Thank you, Gary. Good evening.
You've had the opportunity to hear what we've been discussing. I'd like you to address, please, what you consider the problem and, most importantly, the solutions, since you were in that position and unceremoniously thrown out by the people who, in my personal opinion, do not have the best interest of WBAI or Pacifica at stake, but their own self-interest. Your thoughts, please.
Sure. Thank you, Gary. I mean, I was definitely, you know, I agree with a lot of what you say, and Janet and Steve. I think we all, there's a lot of similar analysis of the problems, but I think what I see is the biggest problem, because it isn't just about, it doesn't matter how talented or experienced or anything anybody is that gets brought into Pacifica, because systemically, it's an extremely dysfunctional culture, and it doesn't adhere to, like, anything resembling standard business practices, and there's complete resistance to these things. And I encountered that over and over again. I actually, because, you know, we've been on for a while, was looking it up on my computer. I'm like, no, when did I send that memo? I mean, the entire premium issue, just to address that one issue, because I really feel that there are philosophical discussions to be had, and I've said this before, about all sorts of things, but the nuts and bolts do not work, whether this was a person's personal life, a for-profit business, or a nonprofit. I sent out a memo to all five stations, all units, 1 week before the National Board tried to fire me the first time, which simply asked for an accounting of premiums for the last three fund drives. Not a huge request, not like a five-year document request. Just tell me what the listeners have pledged for, what you have received money for, what you have ordered from the vendors, and what you have shipped. Just basic information, you know? What do we still have to ship out here? There was not one single station in the entire network that could answer that question, okay? No one could supply a report that said, listeners have pledged this much for these items, you know, 10 of X, 20 of Y, and we've ordered this much and we've shipped this much. So it wasn't just New York. It was like the entire network, where it's in a completely broken reporting system on the product that we move, millions of dollars of stuff that goes out to listeners. We both know that we've had numerous complaints regarding fulfillment issues. It's, I believe, more acute on the East Coast because of the financial pressures, and I've certainly come to the conclusion that it started some years ago, because that's what I've been told by multiple people at this point. But the copyright infringement issue is an actual occurring problem, along with, and not just at that station, but most likely at more than one unit, and the lack of fulfillment of premiums. And we wonder where the listeners go. I mean, if you continue to say, I mean, again, just on that one issue, not dealing with the program grid, not dealing with the completely stagnant environment that allows nothing new to occur, and where there's no process. And that's a big part of what leads to any of these issues, whether, you know, every issue you've talked about. A completely, nonprofits are highly regulated. Broadcasting is highly regulated. And these are highly regulated, you know, industries. And we have an organization which does not even allow you to have a human resources director, okay? So never mind whether you have a good one or a bad one. We don't have one, who pays so little for the CFO position so as to hire the person who is willing to take what you were paying instead of every person that was actually selected but rejected the salary. A system where people completely feel there is no consequence to failing to turn in books in a timely fashion so that you can perform audits, no matter how late they are and how much money it is costing you. We're at a point now, I mean, I'm still following what's going on, so when I say we, but I mean organizationally, where we're so far past due on these audits that we're not talking about CPB funds anymore. That's gone. That's in the air. CPB is like, you know, it's going to take us so long to ever get straight again. We're talking about being legal as a nonprofit, being able to legally solicit funds in various jurisdictions without committing a crime, because there's a certain point at which you must have your books in order because you're taking money from the public. And Pacifica is not managing those type of things. And, you know, the very day I was actually fired by the board a month later was the same day we got the copyright compliance back. I feel that there is, and I got so much flack from so many people about anything to do with, like, hey, we need to know what you're really doing. We need this on a schedule. You know, anything the national office asks for at the local level, you have this huge drag factor. And, of course, now it's complicated by, you know, we're kind of decimated financially. And stations are barely, you know, coping, and that has spread like some horrible illness around the network where, you know, okay, so New York before was having a horrible time being able to make its bills. D.C. was struggling something fierce. KPFT has taken forever to finally, thank God, get a transmitter replacement. So it was kind of the two California stations that were doing well financially, and now KPFK is on life support. This is no accident. You can't keep firing everybody who knows what they're doing, like everybody, and keep replacing them with people who are like, I don't know, should we raise funds? Yeah, whatever. Should we see what's going on with the grid? Yeah, who cares? You know, and that's what we have going on in the network, and I don't feel that's an accident. I don't think you can continuously make really poor decisions. You know, things like banking with one bank instead of six big banks so that you don't pay wire transfer fees multiple times per month to move your own money between units and use up several hours of employee time every time to make your payroll twice a month and your health care benefits. Who operates like this? And I mean, so it's the death of a thousand cuts, frankly, Gary, on many, many things. And so I feel like, you know, we can have the governance discussion because that's certainly dysfunctional. But the organization at this point is in such a just a weakened condition from all of this. And, you know, and programmatically, of course, that's a complete discussion unto itself, which is, you know, where are the new listeners? Where is the new programming? Where are the places for people to try out new programs for 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 12 on a regular basis? Not where you have to, like, kick somebody off the air, but where you actually say, hey, we're this educational institution, and we train people to do radio, and we're going to have a 12-week pilot series with this group of people who just trained with us for 6 months, and they're going to do something on the air. There's none of that, so there's no, like, nurturing of new talent, which would bring new audience and new engagement with different tastes culturally. And so you can't sort of stand there and go, like, where is everybody? Everybody's out there because they have been locked out because there's a turf war here, and everybody hangs on to what they feel they have earned and should keep. And nobody sees the bigger picture. And I just, I don't know what to say. I mean, everything you have to say about the debt is correct. And, you know, I've obviously said that on the air before. But, yes, we have this huge, huge chunk of debt from one particular vendor who benefited tremendously from all of the turmoil that was purposely generated, you know, a decade and a half ago. And because of that, you can't do things like get a line of credit. I mean, I looked into all these things, having been the person who had to figure out how to pay payroll for units that don't have it.
Excuse me, you can mention that it's Democracy Now! To which we owe all that money. That's not a secret.
Oh, I know, but, you know, I've said it several times. But, yes, it's Democracy Now! But, I mean, there's, like, there's no yielding there on that debt. And that debt does, in fact, make it impossible to do things like figure out how to get a loan to deal with other problems. And just be able to function as a business that is solvent. And that, like, by itself is makes us very undesirable on paper, you know, and makes it hard for us to make decisions. And I think, you know, these things that are going on with, you know, the possibility of just losing New York, how ridiculous. We were offered millions of dollars in signal swaps. You have to make decisions. Like, you either improve stuff, which should be possible in a market like New York, the number one market. I'm sorry, we should be, like, rolling in support in New York. We should be so incredibly popular in New York, it's ridiculous. And we're not. So if you're not going to fix that, then at least try to make an intelligent decision that doesn't just lose your signal. I don't know. How about we take several million dollars in a slightly smaller signal if we're going to just let it die or change something and don't let it die? And I see that what's been going on, obviously, in the last, you know, year and change is, I would say, it's part of a longer trajectory towards intentionally killing the organization, being led by people who led the charge on that 15, 17 years ago and are now in charge of the organization. And we're seeing the results of that. We're seeing the decisions that they're making in terms of management choices, in terms of not completing basic regulatory compliance necessities like audits, that, you know, they can throw up their hands and say, oh, my gosh, we ran out of money. Gosh, isn't that awful? We don't have a network anymore. But it'll be like, well, no, you've been making multiple decisions for multiple years to lead us to a point of complete and utter collapse. And I do think that's what's going on right now, and I think it's pretty obvious. You know, you follow the money, you look at the individuals, so you say, are these the exact same people that attacked this organization before, and Are these the exact same people attacking it right now? And do the decisions they're making make any sense if you want a station to survive? Like, you know, take out qualified management at a station to be replaced by people where you're like, how did you come to that decision? How did you even make that decision? So I think the listeners are in a desperate state of sadness over how bad this is, because people do truly love their home stations and the network. There's a sense of intimacy with the information that is so unique and not available anywhere else. So there's a sense of community, you know, the community of interest. And I think they feel powerless because these are the same people that, like, aren't getting their premiums when they make their pledges. And so that's it's like a death spiral. If you don't fix it and actually make the positive change, actually fix the business problems of accounting and transparency and say, look, it's a bright, clean day. We have cleaned house and everything is, like, actually the way it's supposed to be in a nonprofit broadcasting corporation. And actually develop policies. Like, instead of having people angry about nepotism and cronyism and, like, how'd this person get that show, or there's no process for, like, why one person gets paid to have a show versus another. Like, I don't know, does the program director like you? Cool. You're getting a salary now. Wow. That's wrong. And it creates a bitter, politically challenged environment for people because it's unfair and it's not how things are supposed to function. So we have to come to those philosophical terms of, like, you know, how much is volunteer? What do you pay for? And I've tried to have those discussions, but everything threatens somebody's already existing self-interest in the organization, whether it's financial or airtime or whatever accounts for the fact that nobody seems to be able to produce accurate accounting at multiple levels, which makes, you know, anyone's mind naturally suspicious because it's money. And I feel there's just so many of those different issues that the only way Pacifica would have any hope, really, at this point, of not just struggling is, A, assessing where we're really at in the media landscape, the fact that radio is changing, what our resources are, and there has to be a really clean sweep of, like, all the sort of basic bones of the organization so that the practices were brought up to an acceptable professional standard internally and externally at the administrative level to, you know, and I'm broadcasting, like, I don't mean professional there, like, oh, if you are not a professional broadcaster. No, I mean, are we doing things that we are supposed to do correctly to run this type of organization and making the opportunities available to fulfill the mission statement and actually give a venue for people to express their ideas? And we're not doing that, and, of course, we're locked in this this terrible death grip. And going on to raise money to simply say, wow, we're on the air begging again, and by the way, this is a six-year-old show you're listening to, but, hey, it has raised money dozens of times, so let's have this on the air, because we can't come up with anything new. We have, you know, I mean, it's... You can't simply go back to the same well indefinitely as people become more and more disenchanted with an obviously failing organization that lacks ethics. And that's what you have after a while when you can't do those things.
And Summer, to add on to what you're suggesting, at the national level, if we had a standards person similar to what PBS has, that nothing gets on the air as a premium unless it's been vetted. And I've had 35 programs on PBS stations around the country in the last 18 years. They have very strict standards, but the premiums can still be extraordinarily creative and unique. And I don't believe that we have done enough, nearly enough, to make our premiums as exciting as they could be. And as a result, when you get desperate, you start bringing on some really poor premiums that I've seen on some stations that should never have been on the air. And then instead of looking at the good premiums that are on the air by all the different CDs and DVDs and books, they'll highlight the critics inside Pacifica and will highlight a few of the questionable premiums that shouldn't have been on the air and say, oh, you know, it's just hucksterism or infomercials, which is not the case. And yet the very people who are the biggest critics never bring in any money to speak. So I think we need to have an outside person that does the helps select the premiums year-round to make it far more dynamic and have the individual show hosts do far more to promote their programs and really make themselves available to be out there for publicity. And Summer, hold your thoughts because do we have Grace Aaron on the phone? Grace? Is Grace there? No. Okay, well, Grace is not on the phone now. I'm going to offer you, Summer, an opportunity to give closing thoughts on what you see the future Pacifica to be if we do not correct these major problems that we have. And be honest, the Catholic Church survived, all right? it's all of its scandals and it had to reform itself. It can no longer do the things. And Pacifica, I believe, has to change itself. It can no longer say no one's going to talk about or discuss any of our problems because we're afraid of the consequences. We shouldn't be allowing these problems to exist, nor an environment of these problems to exist. We should be a professional organization that does professional programming with professionals running it and guiding it, with outside people coming in to help raise funds. And I never see major community leaders coming in, or never see any of the important people coming in who are successful in their businesses helping to raise money. We seem to think of that we're anti-success, anti-wealth, and I think that's just one of our limitations. Your final thoughts, please.
Sure. I mean, I just want to pick up on the fundraising premium issue that you raised. It's not as simple as, like, vet good premiums. It's an overall attitude. You know, that one-day fundraiser that we did for New York, we raised $200,000 in 12 hours by utilizing all five stations simultaneously while offering a minimum number of premiums and putting on programming that was actually interesting and compelling, and people enjoyed the cross-pollination. I tried to make that happen again. There's a desultory disengagement by management at every unit, virtually, okay, to where there's no excitement. It's not like, wow, we're in radio, and this is cool, and hey, okay, so let's put together something that rocks and is successful and makes the listeners happy and raises us money. That's what's missing, okay, the heart and soul, the thing that gives you enthusiasm, that actually says, I like this place. There's a toxic quality to Pacifica at this point where people are treated badly, and everything is the antithesis of what the organization says that it stands for. And that alienates people, and you know, we're the outside funders. Who would touch us with a 10-foot pole? We're crazy. I mean, and that's the real problem, okay? You can't keep having a complete failure to adhere to, again, basic standard business practices for your industry and an insane amount of sort of personality warfare and turf warfare and all this, and expect sane people who can support any number of other worthy organizations to give you big chunks of money, especially if your programming kind of isn't very good and doesn't have anyone listening to it. And I don't mean that universally, obviously, but the failure to engage in this regular process of review of programming and putting fresh things on with things that are, you know, have remained popular, but giving a mix that is alive. And we don't have that interior aliveness maintaining because it's not a healthy environment. It's become somewhat septic. I think that it has to be completely cleaned out in a lot of different ways. I don't know at the time. I spend a lot of time thinking about this, like, how will the organization be saved in any format that is recognizable as complying with the mission, without this, you know, savior complex of like, oh, hi, you're one of the people that helped destroy this place. Would you like to come have the pieces of it? Goody. I think that it needs nonprofits sometimes have to have a very clean sweep. I think the bylaws are abominable. I do think the board structure is terribly dysfunctional. So I think we'll all agree on that. This is no way to run anything. You cannot make any decisions in a meaningful manner that makes sense. And that's like anybody. Like, I just watch people come and go and think, yep, another one bites the dust because, wow, did you try to fix something? They will run you out on a rail for that, trust me. I think that we have to have, yes, some kind of outside intervention. I don't think society is really set up to fix failing nonprofits. Nonprofits have to have a sufficient base of constituency to fix themselves, and that's not the job of regulators. The job of regulators is to see to it that you do things like comply with the law and ship premiums that people have paid for and, you know, adhere to SEC standards and do public meeting notices. We're not doing those things. So I do think that there is some way, perhaps, that if that were imposed, where it's like, no, we're going to clean house and make sure everything gets shipped and processed properly. There's actually internal controls. The person who opens the envelope and counts the money isn't the same person who then, you know, deposits it and puts it in the books. Actually address those issues that have been raised by our auditors every single year for every single audit for the last multitude of years and fix them. We would already be, like, incredibly ahead, okay? I'll just give you one anecdote, okay? Just stopping the bleeding will help an organization tremendously. One of the arts institutions in Washington, D.C., with lots of volunteers, discovered that somehow they just didn't seem to be taking in as much in cash donations as they thought they would be. So they sort of instituted some internal controls. What they discovered is all these lovely people who are driving in to come volunteer here felt entitled to take little bits of money on a regular basis because, after all, they'd driven in and they'd done this and that. When they tightened that stuff up, they suddenly were making a lot more money, okay? And it's that bad in Pacifica. The bigger questions aren't even addressable because the small ones are so dysfunctional. So I do think, Gary, if the licenses are going to be saved, which at the end of the day, what's really important is that we have this capacity to reach lots of people. We haven't invested in the internet capacity to build audience so that we're really utilizing these shows properly. We really haven't, because there's no time to focus on those things because of the burning quality of the organization, that it is constantly on fire and constantly out of money and constantly struggling simply to continue existing, as we can see by no audits right now. Right now, we're not, like, even remotely compliant. So I think it's going to take some outside intervention that kind of says, yeah, clean house, we're going to get all these basic fundamentals in shape. I don't know, 2 or 3 years of, you know, people say receivership, but again, I don't perceive that there's a governmental structure that conveniently accommodates helping us fix ourselves when there are people actively trying to wreck the place. But that is the only thing that would really work is, yes, some sort of almost a conservator for the organization that insists on actually hiring competent people for the appropriate jobs to get this stuff done. And then modeling, you know, actually internalizing some modeling of what to do with real program curation and paying attention to the grid and giving a darn about whether it serves the audience and doing it in a dispassionate and objective way, which does not please everyone because it might not be your taste that gets programmed during that hour, but there should be that process. And to really look at us, I think, as an educational institution, because I feel like a lot of that's been lost sight of. If we were to actually do that actively and say, you know, we actively train people in radio all the time, that new energy would change the dynamics in the organization, in my opinion. I feel that if you really brought people in who were enthusiastic for the medium of communication, whatever they're communicating, and really learned how to do it well so they sounded good and knew what they were doing by the time they went on the air, we do a tremendous service towards training sort of like the next generation of interesting thinkers and commentators. And then, of course, bring in people that already are brilliant in their fields. And Pacifica used to do that. We don't do that. We don't have, like, you know, cutting-edge intellectuals. And we have some, you know, but, like, how many really intelligent thinking people who are experts in their fields do we bring on for intelligent discourse and stuff? There isn't nearly enough of that to engage people. And so I feel it's going to take something completely outside of itself to make any of that happen. I don't think internally it can
Summer, we're running out of time. I appreciate those insights, especially when it comes to having a program directors who don't bring on their friends or people from former cliques who were, in my opinion, were not the most qualified to be on the air. Steve Brown, final closing thoughts, please.
You've got all my thoughts. Sorry. One thing, Gary, the Catholic Church survived in spite of all the problems because it has $4 trillion worth of assets and owns 25% of all the real estate in Rome. Pacifica doesn't have that kind of financial support. So its survival is much more shaky than the church's.
Okay, Janet?
Well, we've got to speak up while we've got it. We've got to make use of every moment of airtime there is, improve it, make it happen if it's possible. And you caught me on a night when I really am depressed by it all. I don't have a clear way out. I think every complaint that's been registered has been a correct one. The way to salvation, I don't know, maybe all the former executive directors can dress up in a white coat and go make an homage to the President of the United States. I'm not really sure. But we've got to get our church in better shape, that's for sure.
Okay, well, I want to thank all three of you, Summer Reese, Steve Brown, and Janet Coleman, for sharing your insights. I'm Gary Knoll. This has been a special extended edition of the Progressive Commentary Hour because so many thousands of people, including in my own audience, are concerned that they don't get their premiums. There are so many problems. There's no one to communicate with, and the station is on life support and lurching from promise to promise, from fund drive to fund drive, and nothing fundamentally changes is not a cause to celebrate. We need to change. Thank you all very much. We look forward to a continuing discussion in the future. Have a nice day.